From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, February 7th, 2025. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Hawaiian Shirt Friday, let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud and sing it proud. Ah, yeah, truly the sweetest sound this side of heaven. Well, let's get this blogcast perfectly launched with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this. It says there are times when forgetting can be just as important as remembering, and even more difficult. Especially if you have a wife.
I don't think that's funny.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
How well I know.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Boy.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Of course, you might. Wouldn't lose any sleep over it, though. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1940, the second full-length animated Walt Disney film, Pinocchio, premiered. Now, it was the story of a puppet who wished to become a real live boy, and along the way, he learned that every time he told a lie, his nose grew. So he wished upon a star, and he became a real live boy with a real long nose. I think he became a politician. Hey, what can I say? Not all stories end well. And it was on this day in 1964, the Beatles landed in the United States for the first time at the newly renamed John F. Kennedy International Airport. They then embarked upon a nationwide tour where the girls in the audience screamed so loud, you really couldn't hear the band. It's what spawned the epidemic of tinnitus among baby boomers.
Can you hear me now?
Andrea Mitchell's last day with MSNBC is today. Officially, I guess it's at noon. But she's stepping down. And she has been a part of that network for 17 years. Sitting at an anchor desk doing what she does isn't a particularly easy job. Andrea is 78. She doesn't look it. But then again, she's on TV and they use makeup and a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm sure if I had her resources, I'd look really good too at age 78. But according to the publication The U.S. Sun, Mitchell is the network's longest-running daytime host. I had forgotten that MSNBC had been around that long. Actually, when it first started out, it was a pretty decent network. But then all of the outright hatred for conservatives managed to work its way through in a slow system of attrition in the network. Joy Reid is the one who needs to really go. I mean, this woman, Joy Reid, is absolutely nothing but a huge ball of hatred. And this kind of stuff really should be relegated to the ash heap of media history. But this isn't about Joy Reid. This is about Andrea Mitchell. I never regarded Andrea as particularly bright, but I could be mistaken. I'm serious about this. I could be mistaken. There were times I saw her on TV doing interviews, and I thought, seriously, Andrea, do you not know this? But what would make me criticize her so much was the fact that she seemed to be so clueless as to what the American people want in their lives, what the American people expect of their country. And Andrea was just a shill for the left, a shill for the Democrat Party. And she would ask some questions that just absolutely just came out of nowhere. But then again, she's not the only one in that business that that's guilty of that. So anyhow, she announced back in October that she was going to be leaving. And at that time, she said, after 16 years of being in the anchor chair every day, I want time to do more of what I love the most, connecting, listening, and reporting in the field. At age 78, I would think she would just want to quit. But her departure, and this is what's interesting, because this is part of a group of departures that just went down recently. This comes in the midst of a massive network-wide shakeup at MSNBC. It's up for sale. The parent company wants to get rid of it. That's NBC Universal. And viewers, of course, snubbed their programming after Trump won this election. And he didn't win this election by a little. He won it by a lot. So in January, in other words, last month, MSNBC President Rashida Jones announced that she was going to be stepping down after 4 years. But just last week, big-hitting political reporter Chuck Todd announced his departure. Now, longtime talent is slipping through the cracks as the network attempts to break away from NBC News and create a spinoff with CNBC under new corporate leadership. But if they're going to do that successfully, they really have to change their editorial stance. Because you don't get on a network, be it just a cable network or over-the-air network, you don't get on a network day after day after day and espouse a political ideology that runs counter to the great majority of your nation's voters and expect to stay alive. You can't sell advertising that way because how do you sell advertising? You do it through ratings. Your sales executives have to go out. They have to visit the advertising agencies, in some cases, companies themselves, and convince them to spend oodles of money on advertising on their network, their signal, whatever it is that they're broadcasting through, and promise them a return on that advertising investment. Well, if you're not getting a return on the investment, they're out of there. And that's what pays those salaries. Salaries, by the way, which have been going down incrementally over the years. So, Mitchell's just the latest cable news personality to make a departure from an on-air position. Now, to be sure, this is the end of an era at MSNBC, because they launched Andrea Mitchell Reports back in 2008. So, this makes it the longest-running show in MSNBC's daytime lineup. Network has yet to announce what's going to replace the program. I suggest maybe old movies. How about episodes of The Little Rascals? That would certainly be more interesting. Mitchell's career spans over 5 decades at NBC. She's no newcomer. And she's covered every U.S. presidential campaign since 1980. And, of course, reported on major global events associated with those events. NBC executives were very complimentary of Mitchell's contributions in a memo, said, Andrea remains one of the country's foremost and most trusted experts on foreign policy and domestic politics. Well, you could have fooled me, because as I mentioned earlier, I was just never really impressed with her. She presents well. She can read a teleprompter better than anybody in the business. But as far as thinking on her feet and actually being able to ad lib in front of a camera and a microphone and prove that she truly understands the material, she's been lacking in that regard. Certainly not one of the worst, but not one of the best. So in their memo, they said her deep sourcing and ability to land the biggest name news-making interviews are unmatched. We're so pleased that she'll remain an essential part of the news group for years to come. Really, in what regard? So, her departure comes at a time of real flux at the Peacock Network and its sister channel, MSNBC. And, of course, Chuck Todd, former Meet the Press moderator, left NBC News last week after nearly 2 decades. His last day was last Friday. Good riddance, though. He's annoying. And let's see, who else departed? Oh, yeah, Jim Acosta, he's out. Big three right there, Andrea Mitchell, Jim Acosta, and Chuck Todd. Or as Rush Limbaugh used to refer to Chuck Todd, F. Chuck Todd. Chuck Todd was one of these people who took himself way too seriously. So what's really happening here? Basically, cable news is losing its grip on the viewing public. And here again, it's because of one thing only. CNN is losing just as well. And it's because of one thing. The constant drumbeat for the Democrat Party. The constant advocacy for left-wing ideals, such as they are. Since we're on matters of the media, I thought you might like to know the FCC has actually released a fully unedited video of Kamala Harris' controversial interview with 60 Minutes. This is going to be a good thing for 60 Minutes, really. It's kind of a cleansing. They may not see it that way in the editorial board there at CBS, but eventually, I don't know. You remember back in the early 80s when NBC rigged trucks to make the Chevy trucks or GM-built trucks and tried to make them look like they had a penchant for flipping over when in fact they didn't? And you could see in the film footage on NBC that there was a device being used that would flip the truck over, and it was attached to the chassis of the truck. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, NBC went on this big mea culpa campaign afterwards saying, well, in the future, we're going to be more accurate and we're bullcorn. The media, the mainstream media, all have an agenda and it's not going to change. They would rather go bankrupt and approach the government hat in hand for a handout than to change their editorial ideals such as they are. But anyhow, this new video shows CBS News only aired half of Harris's response to 60 Minutes reporter Bill Whitaker's question about Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, not heeding the Biden administration. That's what that was all about. You know, Israel is bad because they're not listening to the Biden administration. Well, Whitaker asked Harris. He says, the Wall Street Journal said that he, your administration, has repeatedly been blindsided by Netanyahu and, in fact, has rebuffed just about all of your administration's entreaties. So Harris's response was, pure word salad. Let me read that to you.
Well, Bill, the work that we've done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region. And we're not going to stop doing that. We're not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
Mind-boggling. So, the raw transcript shows CBS News had aired only the first half of her response to 60 Minutes correspondent Bill Whitaker's question, and they aired only the second half of her response, and it's because of the word salad. Nobody's actually coming out and saying that, but you can see that if you look at both segments of that interview. So, I was going to use a term I can't really. I don't feel comfortable using, okay? But the S show being put on by mainstream media, and in this case CBS, is very obvious here. So what the FCC is attempting to doing right now is they've already launched this investigation on whether CBS News exhibited political bias against Trump and the Republican Party during the 2024 election cycle. So it's not just about this interview. Finally, the Federal Communications Commission is going to look into the mainstream media overall and their left-wing bias. And I'm all in favor of this. I really am. But there's this little caveat rolling around in the back of my pointed little head, and that is, we still have the First Amendment. If the mainstream media can support themselves by advancing a constant left-wing agenda, they're protected by the First Amendment in doing that. They just If this is what they want to do, they can. But it's like everything else, you know, Newton's law. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So if the media wants to do this, fine, do it. You don't have to watch it. And ratings, the Nielsen ratings have proven you're not watching it, which is why all these high-paid anchors are leaving and these various channels on the cable and satellite systems are up for sale. It's the arrogance of some federal agencies and federal employees that stuns me more than anything else. I have a Facebook friend by the name of John Blackman, and good guy, good conservative. And he sent me just a link on Facebook, and it's to Kevin Steele's post. And I love this because Kevin Steele wrote, he says, now this is from, I guess it was Twitter. He says, you paid for it, but not anymore. Breaking, this morning, the White House released more projects that you paid for with USAID, the wasteful, unaccountable government agency that's been dismantled by Doge and Elon Musk. Here's a look at where your tax dollars went, including terror groups. I hope you're proud. So here's the list. I just want to run this off for you. And John, thanks for sending this along. $7.9 million to teach Sri Lankan journalists how to avoid binary gendered language. $20 million for a new Sesame Street show in Iraq. $4.5 million+ to combat disinformation in Kazakhstan. $1.5 million for art for inclusion of people with disabilities. $2 million for sex changes and LGBT activism in Guatemala. $6 million to transform digital spaces to reflect feminist democratic principles. $2.1 million to help the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, value the diversity of Libyan society. Why are we supporting the BBC? The BBC is supported by the British government. $10 million worth of USAID-funded meals, which went to an Al-Qaeda-linked terror group. $25 million for Deloitte to promote green transportation in the country of Georgia. $2.5 million to promote inclusion in Vietnam. $16.8 million for a separate inclusion group in Vietnam. $5 million to EcoHealth Alliance, one of the key NGOs funding bat virus research at the Wuhan lab. $20 million for a group related to a key player in the Russiagate impeachment hoax. $1.1 million to an American LGBT group. $1.2 million to help the African Methodist Episcopal Church Service and Development Agency in Washington, D.C. build a state-of-the-art 440-seat auditorium. $1.5 million to promote LGBT advocacy in Jamaica. $2 million to promote LGBT equality through entrepreneurship in Latin America. And it's like those guys on the infomercials in the middle of the night on your TV. But wait, there's more. $500,000 to solve sectarian violence in Israel just 10 days before the Hamas October 7th attack. $2.3 million for artisanal and small-scale gold mining in the Amazon. $3.9 million for LGBT causes in the Western Balkans. $5.5 million for LGBT activism in Uganda. Oh, I bet it goes over real well over there. $6 million for advancing LGBT issues in priority countries around the world. That's how it's described. $6.3 million for men who have sex with men in South Africa. And $8.3 million for USAID education, equity, and inclusion. And for decades, USAID bureaucrats believed they were accountable to no one. It's none of our business to look into that. But thanks to Donald Trump and Elon Musk, that era is over. It's stunning material. So, this U.S. Agency for International Development, it's USAID, was a little noticed federal agency until it suddenly became the object of a fierce political battle over the limits of presidential power and the accountability of government bureaucracies. So, When the Trump administration closed the agency's offices a few days back, February 3rd, and later placed most employees on administrative leave, which I love, USAID took center stage in a drama unfolding at both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. On one side is the Trump administration's ongoing effort to make all parts of the executive branch comply with the president's agenda. On the other side are congressional Democrats who are warning that the action's a dangerous abuse of executive power and are vowing to fight it. And how are they planning to fight it? Well, they've already started. Congressman from the Houston area, Al Green, has already started impeachment proceedings against Donald Trump, and I wish him all the luck in the world. This may finally be the straw that breaks the camel's back when it comes to Al Green's career. But you've got several observers who fear that USAID's true purpose to advance U.S. interests through the use of soft power may be overlooked. Well, we're spending a hell of a lot of our money, you and I, we're spending a hell of a lot of our money on stupid causes, a lot of LGBT activity around the world where it's not welcomed. And in the process, you have to remember, you and I had no choice on whether this money is spent. So Trump appointed Secretary of State Marco Rubio as acting director of USAID, and the next day, the president indicated that the agency may be shuttered and its functions permanently transferred to the State Department, which is probably how it should be done. So here's why critics want to abolish or reform the agency. Supporters want to save it, and what may happen next. USAID was established by an executive order of Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, in 1961 to advance U.S. foreign policy by offering developing nations technical assistance, help with education and health care and disaster relief. In other words, to portray us as the good boys, the good guys. We're in town to save you. And the idea was that turning poor countries into stable world citizens would benefit U.S. citizens, too. A stable, prosperous nation makes a good ally. That's how the theory went. And remember, this is still kind of the dawn of the atomic age. And champions of USAID continue to see it as both an essential tool for foreign policy and a tangible expression of the goodness and generosity of the U.S. people. And most observers agree that the agency does some good, relatively small by Washington standards. USAID employs about 10,000 people and controls an annual budget of about $50 billion. Yes, that is relatively small by Washington standards. And in 2023, USAID poured $10.5 billion into humanitarian aid and $10.5 billion into health programs in countries around the world, according to the Congressional Research Service. And one program that's often touted as a shining success story is the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. That was a USAID program that had provided more than $110 billion for controlling the spread of HIV/AIDS in more than 50 countries. So, Scott Pegg, acting director of the Global and International Studies Program and chair of political science at Indiana University, Indianapolis, said, "Most estimates are that somewhere in the vicinity of 27 million people are alive today because President Bush initiated and Congress supported that program." Well, Trump said in remarks to reporters Monday that was Tuesday, that some of the money is well spent. Yet the agency's halo dims on closer inspection. Refer to that laundry list at the beginning of this segment provided by John Blackman. So critics are telling the story of an agency gone rogue, wasting millions of taxpayer dollars on inane programs, refusing to answer basic questions from congressional committees, and actively undermining the foreign policy goals of the United States. And to me, when you bring a member of an organization like this before a body like a congressional committee and you don't get answers, that right there is a red flag.
So back on Monday, the White House produced a list of projects funded by USAID that it characterized as examples of waste and abuse. So Representative Wesley Hunt, he's from Houston, listed further examples on social media platform X on Monday, including the $56 million to boost tourism in Egypt and Tunisia, and $27 million for reintegration gift bags for deported Central Americans. And Hunt said the agency was behaving like a child with your credit card. What a beautiful analogy. But that is exactly what's happening. Some USAID grant recipients include terrorist-controlled organizations, according to a study by the Middle East Forum released February 1st. The study found that $122 million has gone to groups aligned with designated terrorist organizations, including millions of dollars for organizations directly controlled by the Hamas terrorist group. Now, a July 2024 report from the U.S. Office of Inspector General noted deficiencies and vulnerabilities in USAID's vetting process, which is supposed to prevent the diversion of U.S. funds to terrorist organizations. And in one case of apparent abuse, check this out. USAID partnered with Chemonics, Chemonics. It's an international consulting firm to spend $9.5 billion to improve health supply chains. Chemonics allegedly overbilled the agency by up to $270 million and failed to meet its objectives, and the project led to 31 indictments for the illegal resale of USAID-funded materials, according to Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa, Republican, who's called for an independent analysis of USAID grant recipients. Ms. Ernst said USAID also provided nearly $1 million in funding to China's Wuhan Institute of Virology, which the CIA has said was the most likely source of the virus that causes COVID-19. We suspected that early on, though, didn't we? USAID has resisted congressional oversight for decades, according to some lawmakers, resulting in a culture of defiance. And that's it exactly, because when they've been called before congressional committees, the committees don't get answers. Arrogance, entrenchment, theft from you and me, the American taxpayers. And Ernst wrote in a letter to Marco Rubio on Monday, the agency has engaged in a demonstrated pattern of obstructionism. False claims were made that certain documents were classified to delay review by congressional staffers and to mislead Congress on the indirect cost of programs, Ernst wrote, adding that in some cases, this amounted to more than 25% of the grant total. Stunning! Now, the agency refused to provide data on administrative costs, according to Ernst, and the agency later said that providing the data to Congress would violate federal law, but that's a crutch they always use. And that it had no obligation to respond because Ernst didn't present a formal request from a committee of jurisdiction. Well, obviously, they are unaware at USAID that there's a new sheriff in town. To the Comedy Corner with Seth Knorr.
Bravo, this is going to be fun. Yeah, I get to perform at a lot of fun and interesting places. Actually, not that long ago, I got booked to perform at a prison. They had one requirement, though. For me to get in, I had to first pass a criminal background check. I'm like, so how did all the convicts get in? Growing up, my mom, she always tried to discourage us from going to jail. She'd always be like, look, if you go to jail, all you're going to get is bread and water. And she was a terrible cook. I'm like, tell me more. I was in Florida and somebody told me it's actually a felony to pick an orange off of a tree you don't own, even if it's on public property. And I was thinking about that. Wouldn't that be like the worst thing to go to jail for? What you in for? I had a vitamin C deficiency. You'd have to come up with that lame excuse on why you're not supposed to be in there. Like, I thought it was a tangerine. Every day you'd be reminded of your crime. You know, because in prison they make you wear orange. My dad's a scientist, and he would talk about global warming back in the 80s, and I'm a comedian, so I had some questions. I'm like, doesn't the fact that it was like negative 20 degrees in like a ton of states last winter, doesn't that kind of disprove global warming? And he's like, no, actually really cold days are a side effect of global warming. I'm like, huh, that kind of sounds like a diet drug that has a side effect of weight gain. He's like, no, the reason why you know global warming is real is you're going to have really hot days and really cold days. I'm like, wow, global warming does exist. It's called summer and winter.
Get on out there and make it a terrific weekend. Thanks for listening. We will catch you on Monday's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?